Hey, this is the last in this series of Beating Odds. Staying together, staying in love. Staying married, staying in love. Hooking up together and staying in love for life. I'm telling you, that's what we want to have happen. I want your marriage to be something you love, you cherish, you nourish. I want to tell you something. You know, Brenda and I have been married over 30 years, well over 30 years. And I am telling you, when I leave, I'm getting ready to leave town next week. I'll just be gone 3 days. I just can't hardly stand the idea that I'm going to be away from her. And when I get gone, I can't stand it till I get back to be with her. She's my best friend. She's the person I want to spend my time with. And I'm going to tell you something. We did not get here by accident. And we didn't get here without some incredible challenges in our life. And we both made big mistakes. But here's the deal. We learned that the minute you recognize you're off course, get back on course. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Getting back on course so you can beat the odds, stay together, and stay in love. Man, wouldn't it be great if you felt as special right now as you did back when you and your mate were dating and courting and trying to attract each other and trying to draw each other into a relationship? Well, I want to tell you something. In my new series, Staying in Love, I'm going to show you how to make one another feel special, how to bring back all of those special feelings and then some. This is going to be a life-changing, marriage-changing series that you and your spouse can listen to together and stay in love. Man, there's so many important things you really need to know about staying in love, about beating the odds, about making things work. And you know, in this last message, I'm going to be sharing some things with you that they're random things, but they're things that we just got to make sure that you get the point on. You know, I made this statement in my introduction. You know, Brenda and I are crazy in love. I mean, we are still crazy in love, but that doesn't mean it's always been easy, and that doesn't mean we haven't both made mistakes. It doesn't mean that we haven't really, really had some hard times, but we've just had to make course corrections along the way whenever we would realize that we were off course. Now, let me tell you something. Sometimes, sometimes when you get off course, it's because somebody does something wrong. Sometimes when you get off course, it's just because through time and circumstances, you're both changing. See, so many people think, well, you know what? We've fallen out of love. No, you probably haven't fallen out of love. What happened is you grew up, you got older, you had kids, your kids grew up, your kids left home, your health situation changed, financial situation changed, job situation changed. In other words, your life changed and you didn't pay attention to what was important. And what was important was making sure that as your life changed, you made the adjustments along the way so that your spouse remained to be the number one commitment, the number one relationship, the number one priority in your life. Now, I want to tell you something. It don't matter if you make a lot of money. If you're not happy at home, all that money is going to do is get you in trouble because you're going to go out and spend it on some other woman. Or on some other man. It really doesn't matter what else you have working in life. You want your relationship to work. And I'm telling you, if you get your relationship working, I got news for you. You're going to be happy. You're going to be satisfied. You're going to be really, really thankful for everything that you've got, because everything you have, you're going to enjoy a whole lot more whenever you're in love. Now listen, I'll tell you, I remember one time I was off preaching a meeting and Brenda was with me. And, you know, there wasn't anything horrible going on in our marriage. We didn't really understand, but I remember we were out eating one night before I had to go preach. And I remember I reached across the table and we were in a Red Lobster and I started to cry. I mean, honestly, I just started to weep. And I said, you know what? I just feel like you're slipping away from me. And, you know, she looked back at me and she said, you know what? I feel the same thing. I feel like I've lost you. Neither one of us were doing anything destructive in our marriage. Neither one of us were doing things to hurt each other. Neither one of us were doing, you know, trying to neglect each other. But you know what? Our life had changed so much that we hadn't figured out how to make the adjustments on those changes. You know, whenever our kids were at home, and we had a house full of kids, and Brenda had a whole lot of demands on her time. Well, in those days, I worked a lot more because she didn't need as much attention. If I'd been at home, I couldn't have given her as much attention as I might have wanted to, because because she's working these kids. She's cooking meals. She's cleaning house. She's doing laundry for, you know, for a passel of kids. And so suddenly all of these kids are gone, and now I'm the one who is the primary person that's going to communicate with her and talk with her and spend time with her. Those changes came, and we didn't make those adjustments as the changes were coming. And so over a period of time, this vacuum creates, and you're thinking, what in the world is wrong? But I'm going to tell you something. We didn't just let it go. We admitted that there was a problem. We admitted to each other that there was a problem. And the real truth is we didn't even try to work out a whole lot of stuff between each other, between ourselves, as much as we both kind of walked away and said, what do I need to do? Now that we are both aware that there's a problem, what am I going to do? We didn't go get counseling. We would have if we'd needed it. There's been times that we've gone and got counseling. But we just backed up and said, oh, wait a minute. We are both aware that there's a problem. But more than that, we are both aware that we want to solve this problem. Just the fact that we addressed it. You know, I got news for you. Throughout life, anything you're doing, whether you're in business, whether it's your health, whether it's your marriage, you're going to stay off course almost all the time. But if you're paying attention, and if whatever is important to you, you're going to constantly make these course adjustments so that you get back on track, and you're able to, to be on course with your marriage. That's really what this session is about. This is about getting back on course, because so many people get off course, and if they don't make those course adjustments, then they grow farther and farther apart. And getting apart is just what they say, is growing apart. It's not jumping apart, it's growing apart. It happens over time. Now, usually what happens over time is through neglecting one another, through not paying attention to one another, eventually one or the other of you begin to feel rejected, and basically your heart gets broken. I'm going to tell you something. When your heart gets broken, and we talked about this, Jesus said that the only reason God even made it legal for you to get divorces is because of hardness of heart. Even God, who would say, God's not an idealist. God would say the perfect thing is that you can always work things out. You can always stay in love. You can always solve your problems. But you have to do that because both people die to themselves. Both people are growing in God. Both people are committed to making one another feel special. And it takes both people. And God's not an idealist. He knows that both people aren't always going to do that. And when hardness of heart comes in, it really becomes totally impossible to have a relationship with a person who has hardened their heart. There can't be any love exchange, if you will. So as you grow apart and somebody gets a broken heart, well, usually that person with the broken heart starts feeling needy and maybe even gets demanding. And then the other person maybe has a hardened heart because they've been insensitive. They hadn't been paying attention. They hadn't been showing love. They hadn't been showing kindness, whatever. There's all kinds of ways this scenario can happen. But at the end of the day, what usually happens is people get tired of trying because hope deferred makes the heart sick. I want to tell you something. If your heart's already sick, if you're already hurting inside, the last thing you want to do is try something that's going to be another disappointment. The last thing you want to do is put a lot of effort into something that at the end of it, you're just going to feel like a nothing. You're going to feel rejected. And, you know, I said this, I think in our first program, I talked about this. What happens in most marriages, whenever they blow up, is that there's one person that's taking advantage of the other person. They're being cruel, they're being hard, they're being insensitive, or they're being neglectful. And eventually that person gets a vacuum. They get so desperate in their life. And usually that person is the one that ends up having the affair. That's the person that usually ends up doing something wrong. Now, you know, in our religious society, everybody points to the person that had the affair and says, oh, you're such a bad person. But they don't look at the 10, 20 years of neglect or abuse that person went through to get them in such a destitute place. As a matter of fact, As a matter of fact, the book of Malachi warns about the hateful divorce, about the person that basically pushes their mate out by mistreating them and by being unkind to them and covering what they do through religion. And I'll tell you what, there's all kinds of Christians that know how to play that game. It's like, I'm going to treat you bad, so you'll be the one to leave, so you'll get the blame for this, and I'll be all right with God, and I'll be all right with the church, but you'll be the one that's out. And sadly, that's what usually happens. But usually by the time it gets to the point that the marriage is ready to blow up, the person that's been insensitive, the person that's been paying attention, they suddenly decide, oh, wait, I want to save my marriage. Well, the problem is that other person has been abused, been disappointed, been hurt. They have reached a place to where they are not willing to try again because they can't take another disappointment. They can't invest another year or another 5 years into this thing and suddenly find out that you're really not going to do what you said you was going to do. Let me tell you something. Most people stop trying because they lose hope. Now, I want to tell you something. If you want your mate to have hope again, give them a reason to hope. Be a person that inspires hope. And you know what? If you've mistreated your mate and you push them away and you've rejected them, you'll start doing some of the things that you should have been doing all along, and they're not going to trust it. And they're going to reject you. They're going to be standoffish. They're not going to be warm. And you're going to be thinking, well, I'm doing all the right things. They need to be responding. Well, you know what? They're probably not going to respond until they trust you. And if you quit, then what that tells them is that you really haven't changed. You really haven't become a sensitive person. You really haven't become an attentive person. You're just trying to use that as a ploy to get them to come back. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's why I say you've got to work on yourself. And the changes that you need to make in your life to have a great marriage can't be just to get a great marriage. You want to realize that having a great marriage is a byproduct of you developing who you really are in Jesus and letting your spouse develop who they are in Jesus. And who you are in Jesus becomes an inspiration so that they have hope again, so that they want to make this journey with you, so that they want to share their heart with you again, so that they want to be vulnerable again. You know what I found? Before things get to that stage, what I found is that most people are trying as hard as they know, they're just trying the wrong things. And they're trying the wrong things because there's not communication, there's not sharing, there's not talking. Most people don't know how to even bring about meaningful communication. People talk about things with one another, but it doesn't mean they open their heart. It doesn't mean that they actually become vulnerable. You know, whenever I used to do a lot of counseling, in almost every marriage conflict that was trying, now there was the ones where somebody had given up, didn't go this way. But usually, when there was still hope, both people would sit down and, you know, you'd ask a wife, you'd say, tell me what's going on here. And she'd say, I'm trying everything I know to do. I can't make this man happy. He doesn't appreciate anything I do. And I just don't know. I don't know what to try anymore. And so you say, okay, you go out in the hall and wait, and you bring the husband and say, okay, kind of tell me your version of what's going on. I'm knocking myself out. I'm killing myself to make this woman happy. And nothing I do makes her happy. And so you look at that and you say, who's lying? You know what? Usually nobody's lying. Usually both of them are trying as hard as they can, but they're trying the wrong things. And they're trying the wrong things because, number one, they probably never asked what that other person wanted. I'm going to tell you something, and in my book, We Still Kiss, and every time I teach on marriage, I always talk about this. You know, you do your top 3 to 5 things that's hurting each other, and you say, this is what you do that hurts me, and then now you know. You just stop doing those things. But then the big step that where recovery comes is, what are the top 5 things that would make me feel loved? I got to tell you something. Whenever Brenda and I first got married, I was under a lot of pressure. I was under a lot of financial pressure. I was really in survival mode. I was fighting for my life physically because of the kidney disease I had. And I was, we were struggling financially. So, I'm telling you, even though I was wild and crazy in love, I still always had to keep a lot of attention focused just on survival. And you know, there were a lot of things that Brenda said, these are things that are important to me. And honestly, I'm like, that's just kind of frivolous, you know? And I would discount it because I'd think, man, we're struggling and there's more important things in life than this. Well, see, you know, what I was really saying is what you want is really not important to me. What I was really saying is your priorities should be the same as my priorities. Your feelings should be the same as my feelings. You should see things the way I see things. In other words, I don't care what makes you feel loved. I'm going to tell you what I'm willing to do, and that needs to be enough to make you happy. Now, see, we never say those words, but in reality, that's what we're saying to that other person. That's what we're communicating to that other person. I tell you, there's got to be a way that we sit down and we communicate with our spouse in such a way that they are safe saying, this is what you do that makes me feel unloved. And we don't argue with them. We don't defend ourselves. We might have communication and say, well, help me understand then when we run into this problem, what do I do? You know? And then there's got to be that kind of honesty that just says, listen, this is what does make me feel loved. And I'll tell you something, if we've got that information, if we know what makes our mate feel unloved, and if we know what makes them feel loved, and if we don't do it, and that now, we can't violate one another's dignity or will or worth. We can't violate our mate's choices. But, you know, within these boundaries, once we know what makes our mate feel loved and what makes them feel unloved, the real truth is if we don't comply to that, then we're just selfish. We just don't care. And, you know, this is probably why 50% of the people that came to me for marriage counseling ended up not getting married, because that was the thing I always told them. It's like, we're going to swap these lists. And you know, when they would come back and say, well, you know, he's not doing this or she's not doing this, you know, we communicated. You know, it was real simple. Then really, he don't love you as much as he loves himself. And they would realize then that they were dealing with somebody that was too selfish for them. So let me encourage you something. Find out what they want and then develop the character that it's going to take to have that kind of relationship. And that means that you got to grow so that you feel comfortable. You can be genuine and sincere doing the things that your spouse wants. You know, I've told this story, I don't know how many times. When Brenda and I got married, I didn't have enough money to buy her an engagement ring. I bought her a very, very nice wedding band, but I didn't have enough money to buy an engagement ring. And so after we'd been married for a while, and we were still going through some financial trouble, I think it was our first anniversary that was coming up. I really wanted to get her a diamond ring. And so one night we were out, and this little strip mall that we were in, we got some ice cream, and we walked down, and there was a jewelry store there, and sometimes I think I was out of my mind just for going down there. So we get down to the jewelry store and we're looking around and you know, I'm talking to her like, you know, are there any of these rings that you think you'd really like to have? This that you think you'd enjoy? And so you know, we're looking over these rings. Well, I'm looking over here in this box over here, you know, where everything kind of fit our budget. And Brenda's kind of looking over here in this box for everything that fit her taste. Well, I got news for you. In the early years of our marriage, there was a great gap between our budget and her taste. And so it's easy then to justify being cheap. It's easy to justify, you know, not giving your spouse what they want. So you know, I'm talking to her. I said, yeah, you know, I'd really like to get you something. I'd really like for you to have an engagement ring, a diamond ring. And so, you know, she was showing me one that she liked. And I kept saying, well, what about this over here? What about these over here? And finally, at one point, Brenda just turned to me and she said, Jim, if you're buying this for you, then get me the one you want me to have. If you're buying this for me, get me the one I want. Man. Well, now see, immediately you get on the defensive. Immediately you're thinking, oh, man, you know, I have an ultimatum, you know, and you want to get defensive. You want to defend yourself. You don't want to look cheap, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I'll never forget, I paused long enough inwardly to say, God, I love this woman. I want her to feel special. I can't afford that ring. What do I do? Immediately, God just gave me a simple idea. And I'll never forget, I turned to her and I said, well, okay, here's the deal. If we get this ring, I can afford this now, and I can give it to you, you know, by our anniversary. If you would rather have that ring, we can put it on layaway, and we'll get it out whenever I can pay for it. So the choice is yours. And she said, well, I'd rather have this ring. We'll put it on layaway. We put it on layaway, and we got it out. And we were both happy with that. I didn't get under financial stress about it. She got the ring. I look back now and I think, man, what if I got her that ring that she never really liked? And she had to wear this thing, and every time she put this thing on, it would have been a reminder of the fact that I was too cheap and or maybe too broke to meet her needs. Let me tell you something. The greatest growth that has come in my life has come many times whenever there was something my wife wanted or my wife needed or my family wanted or my family needed, and I didn't have emotionally or financially what it took to do it. And usually I'd come up and I'd defend myself. I would have all these excuses for why I couldn't do it, why I wasn't going to do it, why it was carnal for her to want it or whatever. But usually if I'd go pray, and if I always made love my motive, you see, that's the thing. And by love, I mean making a person feel valued, making a person feel special, making a person feel precious, a hole in this person in high regard. I'm not talking about just, you know, I didn't have a warm and fuzzy feeling about buying a diamond ring that I really couldn't afford. I had a warm and fuzzy feeling about making my wife feel loved and special and precious. And so most of the time, when I went back and I actually sought God, not seeking God from the perspective of change my wife and make her see this the way I see this, or make her understand where we are financially. And I never even went back and prayed and said, you know, give me the money to do this. But I just go back and pray and say, God, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to meet this need, you know, but I want to. And I choose to, and I'm going to follow you. And it was amazing. You know, almost all of the financial gains that I've made in my life, I've made them for two reasons. Number one, I want to take better care of my family. Number two, I wanted to reach out farther in the ministry. And when that's been my motivation, you know, God has always shown me a way to get beyond where I am so that I can meet the needs of the people that I love, so that I can reach the people that Jesus died for and the world that he loves and the world that I love. So the bottom line is the way you get back on course is the moment you realize I am not viewing and treating my wife or my husband as precious, as special. I am no longer making sure that what I do is contributing to their sense of value and their sense of worth. The moment you realize that, it doesn't matter who's right, it doesn't matter who's wrong, that's when you make a course adjustment. And I'll tell you, the course adjustment is always real simple. You get along with God and you just bare your heart to God. It's like, God, I want to open my heart up. You know, I want to make my spouse feel loved. And, you know, God will show you ways, just like he showed me to put a ring on layaway instead of buy one that was too cheap. He will show you options and ways that all of the needs get met. But even more phenomenal than that is that both of you usually end up growing in your trust for God, in your character, in your relationship with God. And, of course, you end up growing in your relationship with each other. You know, I didn't get to go into the Proverbs 31 wife and how much mutual respect that took. There's so many things I'd like to talk to you about, but it's all in this series on beating the odds. Be sure and get it. Listen, stick around for a few minutes. I'm going to share a mentoring moment with you. You know, all great relationships really are just about the condition of your heart. Boy, you get two people that are developing their heart. You get two people that know how to hear the voice of God in their heart. You get two people that know how to deal with offenses and send away offenses. And it's like, man alive, life just gets better and better and better and better. You know something? We have discovered that people who go through any of our heart physics program, always starting with the essential heart physics, that one of the first things that happens to them, of course, is they fall in love with God. They get this abiding sense of the presence of God in them and with them. And then from there, they get a sense of limitlessness. But the next thing that happens is they start falling in love with people all around them. And people who get into advanced heart physics, man, they learn how to deal with their emotions, how to deal with their judgments, how to deal with their pains. Listen, if you want to have a great marriage, if you want to have a great ministry, a great life, be sure and get heart physics. Beating the Odds is a 6-CD series all about staying together, staying happy, staying together, staying in love, staying together, enjoying it. Not just staying together, just to stay together. And in this thing, I'm going to give you a lot of tools to work with. I'm going to give you some homework assignments. I'm going to give you some inspirational material. I'm going to give you some how-to steps. And I'm going to give you what you need so that you can develop yourself as an individual and grow together into an incredible relationship. Man, I hope this series has inspired you to stay in love. I hope this series has inspired you that the most important person in your life, other than the Lord Jesus, is your spouse, the person you're going to stay in love with forever. And the person that, I can remember when Brenda and I got married, and I remember telling her this. I said, I hope we live to be 80 years old so that we can say that we stayed in love for 50 years. And I can remember just envisioning and imagining and thinking about what it would be like to stay in love for that long. Because I got news for you, staying in love wasn't my background. My background was when I was done with you, I was kicking you to the curb. I was going to walk away. And sadly, regretfully, and shamefully, I hurt a lot of people. I broke a lot of hearts. And it wasn't until God brought me to a place in my own life that it's like, okay, I know how to do this now. Listen, one of the key things that I mentioned all through this series is communication, communication, communication. But see, most people don't know how to communicate, and they don't know what to communicate about. I want to encourage you to do something. I want to encourage you to get my book, We Still Kiss, and you need to get a husband. He needs to have his own copy. Wife, have her own copy. You can put them on your phones. You can put them, you can get a hard copy, however you want to do it. You can put it on any device that you have. And every week, read the same chapter. And when you read that chapter, just discuss what was in that chapter, if any of it pertained to you, and if any of it is something that maybe you need to talk about with one another because you've never really talked about it. Those are the kinds of things in my premarital counseling that I would get people to talking about, and they would really build marriages that would last and last and last and survive things that nobody else's marriages would survive. And I know I've recommended this to you before, but that's why we wrote that book, We Still Kiss, is to get people to thinking about and recognizing things that they never thought about. Listen, if you don't have my new app, be sure and go to my website and download the new Impact Ministries app. If you have the old one, be sure and delete the old one. With our new app, you can get everything that we have. You can download it and have it on your phone. You can have our magazine. You can have everything on this app, and it'll be with you all the time, and you can use it all the time.